Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kiley.
I'm Josh Yee.
I'm Judah Sanders.
And this is Engaging Culture, a podcast presented by Bridgeway Christian Church. On today's episode, we're going to unpack the NBA's recent gambling scandal and explore why greed so often takes root in those who already have success, wealth, and influence, and what we can do to protect ourselves against greed, especially as gambling is everywhere. Also, it is Halloween this week, so we're going to talk about whether or not Christians can participate in Halloween festivities. We'll have a little fun along the way. That's the plan for this episode of Engaging Culture. All right. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Engaging Culture Podcast. Yeah. And good morning, afternoon, evening, whatever. Whenever you're listening to you.
Good
dear
car
listener.
Ride.
Yes. Hope you're having a great car ride, run, walk, or if we're putting you to sleep, that's a good call. But Josh, what is the best thing you saw this week?
This is a little odd, but the best thing I saw this week was a funeral. I know.
You are sick.
So my grandmother passed away back in end of September. We finally do the funeral, and it's Catholic side of the family. So it's a funeral mass. There's a vigil the night before. There's a Catholic mass. And then there's the actual burial site piece, which is very, very short. But what was actually very interesting for me was, being Protestant, we tend to focus on the happy and not really think about people as actually being dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas in the liturgical traditions, I think they have a much healthier balance within the acknowledgement that, you know, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, like this is a reality of life and the end of life. And yes, they are going on into the next life, but there's a grieving process that they incorporate into that. And it's actually really beautiful.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking about, you know, how meaningful it is to walk through the realities of death and allow people to feel the loss and then to embrace the loss without pretending like it didn't happen. They're in a better place. They're so much happier. It's like, while all true, we can still experience the death part. And so while that's odd, it was a really beautiful weekend.
That actually makes a lot of sense. And I, you know, I'm teasing earlier about, well, I mean, maybe you're sick in other ways, but I think there is something. I understand the impulse toward celebration of life and all of that. And I'm not here to hate on calling a memorial service a celebration of life, but there is something lost when we're not building in that grief element,
that
the sting of death, as 1 Corinthians talks about, like, we will not feel it eventually, but we feel it now. And there is something to be said about, like you just said, Pastor Judah, that lament portion of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think God is really specific in telling us that we can and that we should lament things like that. And I think that there's something inherent in us that knows that death is not God's dream for us, right? Yeah. That's why even, you know, non-believers and other faith sectors, we all grieve death because there's something just kind of inherent in us that knows this is actually not what God wanted for us. Yep. And so I love that you got to not celebrate, but to lean into that and feel what you felt.
And absolutely. And I think in a future episode, when I'm not so emotionally tied to it, I think it would be really exploring that concept could be really good.
Yeah, absolutely. Judah, how about you?
Best thing I like you the saw. Idea of you crying today.
Yeah. It's really ugly.
On second thought.
Best thing I saw this week, I was really privileged to be able to go to the Exemplary Leaders Dinner last Friday, I think it was, where they celebrate leaders in California or in Sacramento. I was one of the leaders, and what was dope was they asked us to sing the song "Rise Up." And so I sang it, and there was such a viscerally emotional response in the room, and it let me know that like everybody right now is needing encouragement.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes I can forget that, kind of sitting in my own whatever's going on in my life. That's hard to forget that, really, like, this whole kind of nation and world is just having a hard time right now. And so that's all sad, but the best thing that I saw was the ways that in this room where the movers and shakers of this region, politicians, lawyers, I mean, just everybody, Lovelace was there, and to see all of these people just need this moment to release and to cry and to feel And to be able to be a part of that was just huge for me.
That's
huge
cool. For me.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. My best thing, a little more trivial, but got to go to Kings game on Friday with my son Matthew. Trivial. Very trivial. But first time in the history of Golden One Center, which opened in 2016, that the Kings have won their first home game of the season. I have been there for every single loss. The Kings are going to be very bad this year.
Yikes. Oh,
very
bad.
I'm already not that interested in going to more games.
Yeah, they're 1-3 but, or 1-4.
It's rough. It would just, I love going to games with my son, Matthew, especially. Like, we're both just such nerds about the game, and we can just talk and interact about it the entire time. So that was super fun. Fun to see them win. I don't think we're going to have many opportunities to see them win this year. And even, it has been a long time since I've been this unenthusiastic about a basketball season. There's just a lot of things going on in life, and I just don't really want to devote the time or energy toward it. But
it's a rebuild.
To be able, it sure is. But to be able to have that time with him and for us to be able to enjoy ourselves in the midst of all the busyness. And hey, they won. Light the beam.
And they won.
We're happy about that. So it was a lot of fun. All right. We will be right back.
So the recent headlines coming out of the FBI is about a sting operation in which they arrested over 31 different people for these illegal poker games and betting scandals, and it involves some NBA names. So we have some people like Chauncey Billups, Terry Rozier, and Damon Jones, who are players and coaches, and very well known. And it all has ties to New York's major organized crime families, which feels like a movie.
Not great.
It's not great. And so it's all shocking. They're accused of insider information with like prop bets and betting on sports themselves, rigging poker games, and leveraging their status, networks, and access for profit. And it's all shocking type of things. Like, wow, this is really interesting. But it begs a question for me that as I'm looking at these players and coaches who have made millions, currently make millions, and just seem to have all the resources in the world that anybody can ever ask for, are still drawn into this idea of gambling and risking and essentially, to me, from the outside, greed of wanting more, that their millions are not enough. And so when you have success, wealth, status, why would you risk it all?
Yeah, this raises all sorts of questions, and I think first, for those who aren't following the story, to be clear on kind of what the nature of some of these accusations are, is it's things like this gentleman, Damon Jones, had access to players on the Los Angeles Lakers. And because of that, he had information about the team that had not yet been made public. So, for example, one of the allegations was that LeBron James was not going to play that in a game one evening. And that information had not been made public. So he let his friends know, hey, you should bet big on the other team because LeBron is not playing and that hasn't been made public. Once that information gets made public, the betting odds change. So the idea was they're taking this non-public information to try to tip bettors so that they can win at gambling. And then in the case of Terry Rozier, who himself is a player, he essentially leaked information to friends of his. This is not a great accounting of what happened, but this is the gist. Leaked information to friends of his basically saying, hey, I'm going to come out of the game early tonight, so you should bet that I'm not going to do well. All of this is extremely illegal, as we know. It is totally corrupting kind of the integrity of the game. And these individuals, and then Chauncey Billups was involved in like illegal poker games with the mafia, which it just seems like a bad decision. But hey, that's just me. And these are serious crimes. These individuals face many, many years in prison if convicted. But I think to your original question, Josh, it speaks to, number one, greed. Jesus said in Luke 12, be on your guard against all covetousness and every form of greed. Greed is everywhere, Judah. And if we're not careful, we can so easily, regardless of how much money we have, get to a place of wanting more. Because the fact is, you can be greedy if you're dirt poor.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
can be greedy if you're filthy rich. It's really not about how much you have. It's about a heart issue.
Yeah, it's about an excessive desire for wanting more. And excessive being that key word, right? Like ambition says, I want to grow. Greed says, I will never have enough, right?
Yeah.
And I think that greed wins even when you have like all of these millions of dollars, like these basketball players. I think for a lot of reasons. I think one of those reasons is that I don't think that just wanting more money is really the underlying issue of greed. I think what really drives greed is a desire for control, right? And a desire for security and for validation in in ways that help us to miss, help us miss that we actually have enough. And I think that, you know, getting some money doesn't make you actually feel validated long term. Getting, you know, winning doesn't actually help you feel like your life is in control. And so I think that like we have to actually speak to those things through Christ, right? Mm-hmm. Allow Christ to speak to those things. Otherwise, I think we're all susceptible to greed. And I think that it shows up. I think when we think about greed, we often only think about like money and that sort of greed. But there's like all kinds of, I mean, when you think about like affairs, root causes greed. If you think about being overweight or underweight, right? Wanting either more food or wanting this perfect look or this perfect body, all of this is greed. And I think that these are identity issues.
Yeah. And I think that success brings both reward and risk for a lot of people. There's, you get the money, right? So now you have more resources to throw at things because it just doesn't seem like it, matters that much. But you also have the influence and the spotlight. And you see this a lot with NBA players, but my brother-in-law played college basketball, and he talked about all the time that there was always gambling going on.
Oh, I'm sure.
In college basketball, like not on games, but like card games and that kind of thing all the time, because they're just such a high competitive person. In order to play at that level, you have to be hyper competitive.
Success moves the goalposts.
But success moves the goalposts. And I think some of it, it just comes down to, I just enjoy this. And then all of a sudden, I just enjoy this becomes incredibly unwise. And then you get stuck into these situations. I think that also that when you have a lot of success, you begin to believe your own press.
Yeah.
In your the sense hype, of 100%. Like your own hype that you're invincible, that I'm so successful, I'm so smart that I can't get caught or I can't get in trouble. And we
or
see
I have to participate.
Or have to participate. You see this within church leadership scandals too, of like these hyper successful from the outside pastors who have these like absolutely horrific things going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And because they feel like they can't get caught. They can't, like, this is a universal universal thing.
Or we get really good at justifying things, right?
Totally.
We had Erin Dever on a long time ago, and she talked about that exact same issue, that even those who do like positive work through their job feel like have these weird ways of justifying things. But I think you're right. When you're with those who have experienced a significant amount of fame, there is this sense of I'm above it all. And here's the really sneaky part. It's one thing to go, okay, yeah, Chauncey Billups, he's been in the spotlight for 25 plus years as a player and a coach. Terry Rozier, been in the spotlight. Some big mega whatever leader, like been in the spotlight forever. There are like micro doses of this that can sneak into all of us.
100%.
Right? I'm successful at my job. I am respected in my family. Like, you don't have to be a celebrity to fall into this kind of false feeling of invincibility and this false kind of craving for more, right?
And greed never looks like greed to the greedy person. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that there's a, that's why that goalpost piece is so important to me for people to hear, is because it is this very sly way that kind of your heart becomes greed. The Bible often talks about greed as like idolatry, right? Like, and that is a slick thing, right? If it felt like greed, if it looked like idolatry to us, then we probably wouldn't lean into it as much. And, you know, I mean, the Bible says in Mark 8:36, you know, what does it profit a man to gain the whole world but forfeit his soul? And it speaks to the fact that like the soul's appetite will never be quenched by your paycheck, will never be quenched by your likes, by your followers, by your fame, by your success, by that dopamine hit that you get when you win, right? Like winning is fun, but that actually does not satisfy the soul. And so the question we always have to be asking is what will satisfy my soul, and to make sure that we are prioritizing whatever that is, so that when we are, because I don't necessarily think that gambling in itself is like a sin. It's not my thing, because, you know, I just don't have extra money to give away and hope y'all give it back. But like, I don't know that it's like this sin that you're going to hell for. But if you're going to participate, then I think you actually have to be extra vigilant if you're in certain spaces to feed your soul, so that you don't end up in these kind of situations.
And I think, to your point, the idea that success doesn't erase insecurity is really important. Whew,
that's facts.
That it often just hides insecurity, that it is a mask that we wear of like, look how wonderful I am, and you can see all my success. But I can't tell you how many successful people I have spent time with, and I just thought, wow, this is the most insecure leader or person I've ever met. And their bank account looks a lot more impressive than mine.
Yeah.
And so they're still trying to prove themselves through this thing, whatever that thing is. And I think that's a really big piece. And then, but to your point about gambling, I really do think it's insidious. As far as whether or not it's a sin, if you're gambling beyond your means, that is
a
sin, because that's a stewardship 100%. Issue. But also, it's so insidious, and it gets its hooks into you so deeply. And frankly, as a sports fan, it ruins sports. It's becoming absolutely chaotic. And like the NBA commissioner pretending like he's aghast, there's gambling in Casablanca. Like, it's like, you know, it's like, buddy, you do prop bets in your commercials with NBA players. Yeah. Like, you're advertising all this, and then you're acting so aghast that, oh, there's gambling now?
Yeah, it really is true. And my thing is, if you want to get together with some buddies and play poker for, you know, $20 or whatever, something you can afford and you're having a good time, like, go for it. I don't think there's any issue with that.
And I don't necessarily call that 20. Gambling.
Right.
Gambling is when you're risking something that is inherently a necessity for you.
Mm. I would agree with that. And I think what you're referring to, Josh, and that maybe those of you who have better things to do with your time than pay attention to sports might not understand, is truly sports betting is everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
You are made to feel that you are missing out if you're not putting money on a game. And the thing is, there were times where in order to gamble on sports, you had to go to Vegas. You had to go to Atlantic City. You had to walk into a casino. Now it's on your phone.
And from the house.
When I turn on, you know, NFL Red Zone to watch football, brought to you by DraftKings.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if I watch a game, there's 10 commercials for all of these different gambling like, again, you are made to feel you're missing out.
ESPN reports on games based on the betting odds.
Right.
That is how they talk about all the games. Like, who should win, who should not. Here's their odds.
Yeah.
They have an entire app devoted to betting. They have a whole section in, even if you, because I don't sports gamble. I don't do any of that. Mostly because, like Judah, if I want to throw my money away, I'll go to eat out somewhere.
I need all my money.
But
every dollar.
But like, they have full sections in their main app. Like, as you're just trying to go through, here's all your betting stuff, and here's how you get better at this. And so it's like all of these companies and journalists are tied to this, and they're pretending like, wow, this is such a big scandal. Like, this is inevitable.
You know where we don't have this issue? In the theater. I'm just saying.
Oh, no, I take prop bets. I take prop bets on that orchestra every time.
Never heard nobody lose their house over betting whether Elphaba will be able to hit her big note in act two.
But here's a few things we need to understand about the power of all of this, though, is that, I mean, gambling, especially in sort of in glitzy apps and things like that, is just perfectly designed to tap into the male ego. No dude goes around bragging about their slot machine win. You might tell people about it, like, hey, I won a bunch of money. Because that, like, everyone knows. It's just luck. With sports betting, there is this sense of, oh, I'm really smart. I made the right bet. And again, what you have to understand is, if you start betting with a company like DraftKings or FanDuel or whatever, they will keep hunting you down, especially if you are losing. If you go a couple days without betting,
they're going to give you $100 to bet again.
Yeah, hey, bet $100, or we'll give you $100 if you keep betting. They're going to send you push notifications telling you, hey, haven't seen you in a while. Here's a free one. It is this
addicting. Shout out to taking that $100 and put $1 down.
Addicting thing that is just feeding into especially young men all the time. And that's to say nothing about, we mentioned this concept of prop betting earlier, again, which this is just, it is an important societal thing that I think even non-sports fans ought to understand. The idea of a prop bet is I'm betting on a player's individual performance, whether they will have, say, for example, more or less points than a certain number. These numbers, number one, can be easily manipulated. This is what happened with Terry Rozier. Number two, we have players getting threatened online.
Yeah,
we have we have, you know, everybody trying to get inside information. I went to a game in San Antonio in March with my boys, and the group sitting behind us, this young man was just like screaming the entire game for one player to score two more points, because if he did, he was going to win like $200, and it didn't. It didn't happen, and it. I wanted to thank him after the game, because I literally turned to my boys and I was like, this is what will happen to you if you gamble on sports. Because I am, I used to be like, hey, you want to gamble on sports, whatever, not really my thing. I'm now completely against it because of the way it affects people that do it, because of the abuse that happens with the athletes themselves. And you brought this up earlier, the fact that commissioners are talking about, oh, this is so terrible that this is happening, when they are accepting millions of dollars, is the pearl clutching is just insane.
It is insane. And I think it's just important for us to recognize that casinos aren't so large because they're charities and they give away so much money.
Right.
Like, no, they are taking... They are winning.
Yeah.
These betting apps are not existing and paying millions of dollars in advertising because they're losing money.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
You do not win. They win.
Yeah. Right.
And they are taking your money. And that is like, but I could get something out of it. It's like, that is what's going through it. You know, you got to be way more aware of what's going on. So, but to kind of end our time, like, what are some lessons and takeaways that we can take from this?
I think number one, just watching our heart for greed.
Yeah.
It is amazing to me as I look at my life, and I like to think of myself as someone who's not all that motivated by money. Every time my wife or I has ever gotten a raise, it feels like the greatest thing in the world for like a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you're like, how did we ever live on less than this?
Mm-hmm.
Right? We just sort of reset the standard for ourselves, and greed can continue to grow and grow and grow. And there can be this sense of entitlement that comes with us. With it. And we believe if I just had a little bit more, I think it was John D. Rockefeller who was asked, how much money is enough? Just a little bit more.
Yeah.
You can never get there. I think that to me is the first thing we have to remember. Like, greed is lying to us. It cannot deliver on its promises.
No.
That it is promising something we can only find through our relationship with the Lord. And if we chase down greed, we're going to be in big trouble. What's a takeaway for you, Judah?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to build on that, because I think the takeaway for me is that I think we have to all acknowledge that we are greedy. That we are a greedy people.
Yeah.
If we go all the way back to Genesis, right?
Mm-hmm.
How does Eve describe the fruit? As beautiful and good for food. She had the entire Garden of Eden to make whatever salad she was in the mood for. And yet she had to have this one piece of fruit because she was told she couldn't. And I think that it is easy for believers to think more highly of ourselves than we ought to, and to think that we are not at risk for the things that we see most out of control of in the world. And I think that that puts us in danger, right? Because then that says, well, you know what? I probably can do this or be in this space or participate in this way when actually it may be more risky for you.
Right.
And I think that if we can be honest about like, okay, actually I'm a greedy person, then we can really build some guardrails around ourselves to keep that from getting out of control. As opposed to, I think what people do is they say, well, I'm not greedy, but if I ever see myself being greedy, then I'll address the issue.
Yeah.
Let's
be
preemptive in our preparation and say, you know what? It could be me.
Yeah. How about you, Josh? What's the takeaway?
I think the takeaway for me actually has nothing to do with gambling itself. It's this idea that just because it's successful doesn't mean God's blessing it.
Mm.
And I think a lot of times, especially in business, you'll see this, that the business is growing, this must be God's blessing. It could be, but if you're doing super shady things, I don't think that's necessarily God's blessing in it. That we've equivocated God's blessing with the financial gain part.
Yeah.
And that's really actually just a greed funnel, that we are turning God into something that's fulfilling our greed, not us fulfilling our purpose within his plan. And so kind of doing that ego check of like, who's really in control? Who's really being blessed? Asking the question, who am I blessing versus what am I gaining? And I think that mind shift is super important, because some of the most righteous, rich people that I know, that is their mindset, is like, how do I bless others?
Yeah.
That they're not driven necessarily by profits, yeah. but their profits are driving their generosity.
Right.
And that's such a beautiful thing. And I think there's a place for that in the kingdom of God. And just like, how do we bless people with the gifts that God's doing? And that's when I see, okay, this is God's blessing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely right. And when success flows out of that, it's a beautiful thing. When we're asking success to be our primary marker of identity, gosh, that's just, that is a game you cannot win. My last thought, greed is a very uncomfortable thing to acknowledge.
Yeah.
It's one thing to, I think there are different vices that it's like, okay, hey, I'm addicted to my phone. Hey, I, you know, eat too much or too little, or hey, I'm a little into this or into that. These types of things are like, all right, I can admit that. But admitting you're greedy, like yeah. that is a really rough and difficult thing to do. So, and I think we just need to be careful about the shame component of that.
Mm.
But to go, if greed is existing in my heart, it is harming me. And there's actually no shame in acknowledging
it. Yeah, that's right.
But there can be tremendous freedom in just dealing with it, in maybe talking it through with some trusted people, maybe deleting the gambling apps on your phone so you're not less tempted to kind of lean into that. And there can be freedom from that, which I think is absolutely. Obviously really important. We'll be right back. We are back, and it is Halloween week, and
stop it. Is that the beginning of Thriller? What's going on
yeah.
here?
This is going to shock you, dear listener, but we did not rehearse this.
I've been working on that laugh for so many
so
years
good.
Since I was like seven
it's
years
so
old.
Go ahead, Brian.
Good segment. All right, I think we're done here. So in light of Halloween coming up this week, we want to ask the question, can Christians participate in Halloween? And we need to be clear, first and foremost, that that is a very different question than should Christians participate in Halloween? And Pastor Judah, we need to first acknowledge that Halloween is not the only culturally accepted holiday that Christians historically have questioned kind of the appropriateness of our participation in it. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, most of our kind of Christian holidays have connections or origins, or at least suspected origins, to other kind of cultures and beliefs and ideas. As Christianity spread, something that most Christian communities dealt with is, what is the relationship between our faith in Jesus and our cultural beliefs and ideas and activities, right? The Jews really dealt with this a lot, right? What does it mean to be Christian and Jew? And so there are a lot of different theories on how we arrived at Halloween, but mostly everybody agrees that it has ancient roots. The common story is that the name comes from All Hallows Eve, which is the night before All Saints Day, which was a Christian holiday that the church established around the 8th century to honor saints and martyrs of the faith. And as Christianity spread through Celtic lands, the church often redeemed or repurposed existing cultural festivals, one, as a means for evangelism, and two, because they had to live in this world where there were all of these cultural elements, and they navigated that. And so by the time we get to Halloween reaching the Americas through Irish and Scottish immigrants in the 1800s, it had lost basically all of its pagan rituals and kind of had become this communal holiday. And so today we still wrestle with,
right.
does that make sense? I come from a Christian tradition as a child where we did not celebrate Halloween, but we also didn't celebrate Christmas and we didn't celebrate Easter because they had all of these roots.
And that's the element that I think is easy to forget is, and I want to hear you say more about that because it's one thing to kind of focus in on Halloween. There are a lot of Christians who have really had a problem with Christmas and Easter, which 100%. Seems counterintuitive, but there 100%. Are reasons why.
Yeah, I mean, those holidays also have at least suspected origins in Nordic festivals, pagan festivals. Christmas was tied to a wide variety of things, including winter solstice. The same with Easter. There's a lot of discomfort that some Christians have around Easter because of its connections to pagan goddesses and to ideas of fertility and growth. And so, you know, and then there's also, I think what we have to remember is that, you know, that Romans 14 framework, which talks about how one person may consider one day more sacred than another, and another considers every day alike, each of them should be fully convinced in their own mind. Mm. And so what we always have to hold space for is, one, this topic, like a lot of Christian topics, is not as black and white as would be easy, yeah. right? Yeah. And to hold space for the different reasons why people kind of approach these the way they do. My partner, she comes from a country where witchcraft is regularly practiced and commonly practiced. So she has no space for Halloween at all. Like it was almost a deal breaker, I was telling y'all, because the idea that a church would do anything connected to Halloween. And sometimes we fought about this because for me, it doesn't always make logical sense. I'm like, but you'll dress up on November 1st or October 30th and you'll be fine with that and you'll eat candy. But why not on the 31st? And so we have to hold that people are approaching this from deeply personal places. And how do we listen to them and learn from them?
Absolutely. And I'm reminded of, well, not reminded, the way that I really engage with the whole idea of Halloween, because it's always made me uncomfortable from a young age. Mm-hmm. Part of that is because I also grew up going to a Christian school and they do the try to scare you out of participating in Halloween thing. Mm-hmm. Like, here are all the evils of Halloween. It's like, great, goat sacrifices for 8-year-olds. This is interesting.
That ain't a sacrifice. That's curry. That's all that is.
Yeah, that's a physical, offering.
It's delicious.
But the way that my mind began to shift about it is actually based off of Acts 17, where Paul is at Mars Hill, and he is engaging with a council of Athenians where he is talking about the unknown God that they have this inscription to. The Christians at that time, if they were good Christians, very well could have, if they didn't already say, we're not going to there because that's a pagan place. They are worshiping other gods. We're not going to be a part of that council. We're not going to have anything to do with what was happening there. And what Paul did was take their own things and then began to use that to talk about the goodness of God.
Yeah.
And he had this really powerful message in Acts 17, 22 to 31 that really took this idea of the unknown God and really made it something that, like, hey, I'm going to use something that's cultural to them, and then I'm going to begin to insert who our Jesus is in the middle of that and using that as a platform to then have discussions with people. Yeah. And that framework is what really shifted my ability to participate or even host different things like Harvest Festival.
Yeah. And so we've covered a lot of ground so far. So I think we need to be clear on a couple of different points. Number one, as Pastor Judah mentioned, a lot of our holidays were originally meant to counteract pagan celebrations. Jesus was not born in December.
Yeah.
He was almost certainly born in the spring.
Yeah.
Right.
But the early church put Christmas at that time to try to bring the gospel to a culture that celebrated things like winter solstice.
Yeah.
Similarly with Easter. I mean, my goodness, we celebrate Easter on a different day. It is not meant to be like this is the historical day that Jesus rose. It was meant to be an opportunity to redeem pagan traditions. And there is some of that with Halloween. Now, another thing is there is a matter of conscience here.
100%.
For your partner, Judah, she should not celebrate Halloween. Yep. I went to seminary with a gentleman from Latin America who similar concept, and he was very anti-Halloween, did not celebrate, and that was it. Like, if participating in Halloween violates your conscience, like, don't do it and don't feel guilty about it.
Yeah.
But I would gently push back on those who say nobody can celebrate Halloween. I would say to those who want to make that argument, I think we need to be very careful with that, because Halloween, as it is celebrated in the United States, is almost completely, if not entirely, divorced from these supposedly pagan origins, which it bears mentioning, those pagan origins are disputed. Yeah, like, there are good counterarguments to the idea that Halloween was ever pagan at all. In fact, I read an article this morning arguing that actually it all began with sort of All Hallows Eve and kind of a Christian tradition, and it was later on that pagans tried to kind of infiltrate it. But a few points here now for those who are kind of wrestling with this themselves, which, again, if it violates your conscience, please don't do it. Number one is that idea that, again, modern Halloween has virtually nothing to do with its supposedly pagan origins. If you get invited to a seance, you should not go.
Say no.
Right? The Celtic festival called Samhain that some try to say was kind of an inspiration for Halloween. Those who celebrated believed I don't know, my pronunciation is bad. They believed you could communicate with the dead. That is not true. That is unchristian. That is pagan. That is anti-God. We don't get to communicate with the dead. That is not how it works. But there is nothing pagan, demonic, or otherwise anti-God about dressing up in costumes and trick-or-treating. We're not walking in darkness by our participation in these types of activities. And it is, in my opinion, a little bit silly to try to assign a spiritual value to activities that clearly don't have a significant spiritual value.
I also think, and I want to acknowledge this for the listeners, that there is a tension with that whole, like, follow your own personal convictions about this and about other things, because we all have seen those personal convictions be like out of control, right?
Right.
And so I just want to acknowledge that the tension that you may feel as you hear that is warranted and is okay. And I think that, you know, this idea of redemption as something that God does and is doing and is something that we get to participate in, right? So like if you think that that Halloween is evil and dangerous, I think that that's all the more reason that we should give alternatives to that for people, right? Like I would much rather have kids on our campus where one, Pastor Ashley will make sure they are safe. Let me tell you something about that lady. That lady does not play about the vigilance of the safety of kids. I have been cussed out for not watching kids carefully enough by Ashley Dance.
Easy with the cussed out.
Judah uses cussed out to mean severely reprimanded, just so we're clear.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. She did not actually curse me out.
Yes.
Edit that out, Devin. Here's the reality. The reality is I would rather have young people here where they are safe, where we are managing everything, where we are making sure that we are not promoting things that are demonic, that are unhealthy, than any place else. And I think that is something that we as a church do in following the steps of Jesus, who took back lots of holidays, lots of Jewish holidays. We see Jesus come in and kind of reorient those holidays toward himself. And I think we get to do that too.
And here's where I'm going to push back on you on that, because I partially agree. We're obviously hosting a harvest festival, you know, whatever. I think it's great. I would be 100% against hosting a harvest festival on Halloween night. And I will tell you why. The opportunity for cultural engagement that comes with Halloween is, I would argue, unique in our culture. We don't know our neighbors. We don't socialize with our neighbors nearly as much as we used to. Halloween is the one night of the year where the neighborhood literally comes to your door. And what I'm actually encouraged by is different times that I've walked around, like with my kids on Halloween. Like, I don't remember this from when I was a kid. Like, so many people are like out in their driveway. And it's not just I'm hiding behind the door. I'm out there. I'm talking. I'm involved in what's going on. The idea then that we would go, let's pull all the Christians onto our church campus and not be salt and light in our neighborhood on like the easiest night there is to talk to people. Like, man, that's a missed opportunity. And for those that don't want to participate in Halloween for any number of reasons, and my kids are getting older, we're quickly getting to the point where, you know, to what extent is Halloween going to be really a thing in our household? Like, that's fine. Don't do it. But I think, Josh, it's important for us to recognize that there is a real opportunity in Halloween to meet your neighbors, to have conversations, to serve your community. And when we completely withdraw, I'm going to push back on that
because all I want to say, because so many people know where I live, do not come and knock on my door on Halloween. I have nothing for you, children. I love you each. I hope that you get all the Butterfingers and Snickers in the world, but do not come and knock on my door. If you knock on my door talking about trick or treat, I'm putting communion cups in your little pumpkin baskets. I do not like my door to be banged on over and over again. I don't have patience for it. Skip my house. The light is off on purpose.
Well, to your point, Brian, I think
that was inspiring.
The way he just moved on.
Yeah. I just, And I think, Brian, to your point, the opportunity that we have with the community coming to us is also not just that we get to engage with them. We have an opportunity to have extreme generosity shown. Yeah. And that can look like a variety of different things, whether that's hot chocolate for anybody walking by, whether that's warm your hands by this fire pit while your kids are at the door, love to chat with you, to what I would really encourage, you have full-size candies that you're handing out, these kids will talk about you for ages.
Yes, they will. Yep.
My wife still talks about the houses that have full-size candy bars that they're handing out. And she is 40 years old. Like, yeah. That made 29. An impact.
Yeah.
Like, what if we made wild generosity a part of our Halloween? Where it's like, hey, we're giving out the largest candies in the neighborhood. We're giving away things just for the opportunity to connect with our community, to practice something that is just can be fun, that can be do this. You know, but and I think that's a really great way of engaging with our community. Yeah. In that.
There's an opportunity to practice the Christian virtue of hospitality on Halloween.
Absolutely.
What if the Christians gave the best candy? What if the, you know, the Christian houses were the ones that, like you said, and we've done this in our house and it's been really well received. It's like having hot chocolate available for the adults. It's really funny, by the way, if you post a sign that says hot chocolate for the adults, you will get many questions about whether or not it is spiked, mm-hmm. but which ours is not, just to be clear. So there are such opportunities.
Our house in East Roseville might have or an Irish version.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Or might not. I don't know.
You're going to get canceled.
I think there's a lot of other elements we could talk about. I think even the sense of, I think caution is a good thing, but when we're giving into fear a little bit too much, I mean, Jesus tells us, Paul tells us in Colossians 2:15 that Jesus has triumphed over the dark forces of the universe. So I think we need to be clear about the fact that dark forces exist, but we ought not be afraid of them, and so afraid of them that if our child dresses up as Buzz Lightyear, that we're going to be somehow conjuring up these evil forces. And I think with that, motive for what we're doing matters.
Motive.
I don't get to be the one who tells you that by dressing up as a costume or listening to Monster Mash or taking your kids trick-or-treating that you're somehow opening yourself up to demonic influence. And I think, you know, something you brought up, Pastor Judah, earlier was we do need to be careful with this matter of conscience, because we can take that too far. If we're saying, well, my conscience is okay with what Scripture clearly prohibits, like, we're not advocating, like, Jiminy Cricket, always let your conscience be your guide here. Scripture is clear on any number of things, but Scripture is not clear on whether or not it's okay to take your kids trick-or-treating. So there is a matter of conscience to be able to go, what is appropriate to me and what is not. And our motivation, to get back to my original point, is important. If you see it as a chance to hang out with your neighbors and drive up your dental bill, like, great. Have a great time. If you are participating in Halloween because you're really into dark spiritual practices, like, obviously don't do that.
Don't do that.
But we don't need to be trying to say that, you know, kids in princess costumes are the same as those who are trying to host a seance.
100%.
In the same way as people
girl be Cinderella.
People that are stretching and moving their bodies, it is not the same as New Age yoga. It's just not. And we need to be really clear about that and clear about motives. And then last thing is just the opportunity for redemption. Like, we've talked about this already, but like, Christians have a long history of redeeming cultural events for the glory of God. And even, like we said, our modern celebrations of Christmas and Easter
100%.
Are examples of that. So I just say, What if Christians took a day that is often associated with fear and horror and blood and gore and all of that stuff, and we just use it as a chance?
Yeah.
And to that end, if you don't have plans on tomorrow, October 30th at 6 p.m., Josh?
It's today by the time this is.
By the time,
if you're like one of those, like, listen to the episode right when it's released, folks, which we appreciate you.
Come on out to our Harvest Festival at 6 p.m. here at Bridgeway. We're going to have candy. We're going to have a trunk or treat. We have a section for folks that probably can't eat candy, for young people who need other ways to participate.
Our teal
pumpkin patch. There's going to be games. We're feeding folks. Come on out and have a good time with us.
Come on out, have a good time, and understand that there are opportunities. If your conscience will allow you to participate, there are opportunities to represent Christ and glorify God this Halloween season, and encourage you to take advantage of it. We'll not be right back because this is the end of this episode. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
<y'all. laughs>
Thank you.